You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovitz, editor and publisher of the Leibovitz VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here, Jim.
Mark, how would you describe what happened on the stock markets today? A bit of a meltdown?
I wouldn't go that far. The Dow was only off about 32 points. So it's sort of just treading water here the last couple, 3 days. We've had a little, a bit of a Thanksgiving turkey shoot rally. I think I've been referring to that in our previous commentary and in my newsletters, traditional bounce just before and after around U.S. Thanksgiving holiday. And everybody is sort of holding their breath now, which they really shouldn't to too great of a degree. The Fed meeting coming up on December 9th, where the expectation, according to the CME futures watch tool, which you can pull up on the internet, I think is showing like an 89% probability that the Fed will cut, at least a quarter percent. And, there are more significant things going on, and I'll talk about that here. So anyway, the bond market, the U.S. 20, 30-year bond market is really, more important than what the Fed does, because the Fed is, as you know, just short-term rates. And the bond market's been weak. It was weak today and net weak over the last 3 or 4 days. Hopefully it turns. If it does because of the Fed meeting, or it does regardless of that, that would help provide a greater, more positive scenario for interest rates. But the big story, which we talked about last week, which is still monitoring very carefully, is the note rate, the T-note rate, I guess you call it, in Japan, which is approaching the 2% level. And we had a little bit of a rally there. And if you recall the history, I don't know if many of our listeners are familiar with that at all, but basically Japanese interest rates for years and years, were flirting with the 0% level. So really what happened, and for many years, what occurred was known as the carry trade. And this is not something really discussed too often. It's pretty sophisticated, but, the bottom line is you could borrow money, if you're positioned to do so, at 0% or near 0% interest in Japan, take that money over here to the other markets, let's say primarily the U.S., and you get yourself 3, 4, 5% interest and work off that spread, which is a guaranteed return with no risk. So, at the Japanese 10-year, it's actually the 10-year yield is moving up now. Japan has experienced inflation and it's been trying to catch up, I guess, to a certain degree, or forced to catch up. The 10-year rate's approaching the 2% level, and that is causing a slow unwinding of the carry trade. And again, we talked about this last week. And that means is increased risk for the world equity and investment markets, because Japan's a big player, and when rates start going up there, it could put pressure elsewhere, here in the U.S., Europe, the whole planet. So we'll see how far this goes, but it could be a black swan event if it really gets carried away, if suddenly the Japanese government gets in there and does something to change that, pumping money into the system or doing the Federal Reserve type stuff to reduce rates. They can try to force it down, I suppose, and all kinds of mechanisms involved there, just like they have here, that could change that scenario. But if you look at the chart, it's a little worrisome, particularly with this carry trade. So we're talking trillions of dollars that are invested through the carry trade in equity markets, risk-free investments like the treasury bills and bonds and so forth. So we'll see how this all plays out. And, that really is sort of the big story I'm monitoring here, the stock market. You notice when the carry trade situation gets worse and the rate upticks in Japan, we start getting a little bit of a sell-off in the U.S. markets, not, again, much discussed and talked about. And then when it settles down a little bit, a rally starts again here. So, you know, maybe we're just going to get government intervention to prevent anything from happening. But it is a, you know, a risk factor, particularly, you know, when we look at what's going on in the investment world here. You know, we got, you know, many believe, including myself, that, you know, the AI situation is way out of control. You know, that I don't know the best way to describe it is the AI boom is demonstrating all the classic bubble signs which could pop in 2026. And that could particularly happen if interest rates do go up versus going down. And, you know, if they go up, it's, you know, part and parcel to this yen carry trade situation or maybe some other variable. So, you know, a lot of things hanging in balance here. And, but, you know, short term, the other expectation, of course, is the Santa Claus rally, which is due theoretically and may already be experiencing it here. It doesn't mean we have to go straight up or maybe we don't go down as much as we would go down. But there is tends to be some optimism, Jim, this time of year. So, and then, of course, I'm going to be waiting for early January when we start looking at the January barometer and see how the early warning system comes out, how the first few days in the month of January play out in terms of forecasting the year ahead. It's a lot of interesting, you know, it's an interesting time frame. But, you know, coming up now, you know, with Christmas and New Year's, this two-week period where most traders, investors, well, there's always traders around, but many have just taken off. Volume is going to be light. And I think most of the smart money managers out there lightened up and took a lot of profits here in November before in December to lock in, you know, their gains for the year, as many are compensated, you know, based on their returns for the year. So that explains why we saw some pullbacks in some of the bigger names, you know, last few days. In fact, even Apple Computer was down 3-4 points today. So, you know, it's really sort of a watch and wait game here, you know, what the market will do into the new year, whether we'll surge here. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure to keep the market up. I hate to use the word manipulation out there, but unfortunately we do have that in the markets. We had a very classic story of that, in fact, just happened yesterday with the some information coming out from Microsoft. So there was a story that came out early in the morning on the December 3rd, and basically it published a report saying that Microsoft had lowered sales targets for one of its AI products. And, of course, this is a big story for Microsoft and the market. So the market has a sharp sell-off, and then it rebounded real quickly afterwards, as apparently they came out, and a spokesman said, oh, no, it was an inaccurate statement, and so forth and so on, and the stock bounces back. So you're just wondering whether, you know, they came out with a factual story, but the White House called them and said, hey, get your act together. We can't have this happen or something like that. And then they come out and change their story or you know, reverse the story. So it's sort of a disinformation situation here. And, you know, I've seen this so many times in all the decades, you know, where news is used to manipulate stock prices in both directions. So maybe the short sellers were short the stock and they got the story published so they can make some money on the short side. And then when the story was reversed, they, you know, they knew it was going to be reversed, they covered and whatever. So I saw this as a floor trader many times when I was on the floor decades ago, where insiders know the information before it happens. You see it in the pits and big brokers for firms buying options on stocks, and 2 days later coming out, their firms coming out with research reports, you know, boosting the price of it after they already got in 2 days earlier. So I saw this, you know, so that's just the nature of the game. You know, human greed is human greed, and you're going to see it everywhere. But I thought this Microsoft story on the 3rd was really an interesting story of bad news and the sudden retraction of that and denial of it. And there was a big swing in the market because of that. So it was just, if you're in the markets watching this type of stuff, you know, you sort of laugh and say, oh, here it is again. They're playing with stuff. But so in addition to Santa Claus rally. We have Hanukkah coming up. It actually starts December 14th for a week to December 22nd, so it actually ends before Christmas. I think last year it overlapped Christmas, so that's a one-week period, you know, that also involves a lot of participation on the Jewish community, and myself included. So that's also a big positive seasonal event. So this is a good time, you know, if you're trading day to day, you know, we look at stuff. There's always stuff happening. One of the hottest markets in the last couple of days, actually going on for about a week or so, has been natural gas, which we talked about in our previous interview. It actually made a little new recovery high today, looking a little overbought here after a nice move, but the weather seems to be cold, and that seems to be, you know, bringing some buying into the natural gas market, and also the theory that it might be a good alternative energy source until the nuclear operations get underway. So, in fact, one of the big manufacturers for some of the natural gas generators is a company of which I referred to on these reports before, GE Vernova, ticker symbol GEV, one of the spinoffs from General Electric, which not only makes nuclear equipment, but also makes the natural gas there. That stock was actually did well today. I think I'm checking the price now. At last, last I saw, I think it was up about 20 or 30 points today in a sloppy market. Yeah, it was up 27 points today. Big high in that stock is about 660, and it's around $630. So I'm not recommending it here. I think it's a little too expensive, but it's definitely in the, energy generation category. So, you know, if it dropped 150 or 200 points, then I'd probably be more interested in it than here as a trader. But that's another sort of summary of what's going on. And sort of anticipating your question, I'm sure you're going to ask, we're seeing a little uptick here in crude oil, which is starting to break out a little bit on the very short-term charts. I'm not necessarily looking for a huge move, but if you recall, we were short crude oil, and we covered in the last, 10 days or so, and just got out of the short side because it looked like we might getting a little bounce. And I can't give you the fundamental reason for it. I really don't know what would cause it at the moment, but the charts are saying, hey, we might see a little bit more of a rally in crude oil. Maybe it's just in sympathy with what's going on with natural gas. In any event, that's sort of interesting that that's been popping up. So I gave you a quick initial summary, Jim.
The Ukrainians hit two empty Russian oil tankers with drones last week.
You think that's what drove it up?
Well, it would make the insurers of Russian tankers rather nervous, I would think.
Okay. I wonder who insures that. Lloyds of London, perhaps.
They will insure anything if you're willing to pay the premium.
But anyway, we are getting a little uptick in that in that market. At the same time, we're getting a little pullback. Nothing major in the gold and silver market a little bit. So, at some point, you're looking for a little bit of a retracement there. So, silver did better than gold when going to a new high up around $58 an ounce or so, and it did that without gold going above that 44 or 4500 level. So a little bit of a divergence there looking at those markets. So, there's risk. I mean, everything runs up, pulls off. Gold, looks terrific. Could be $10,000, $20,000 an ounce in the next few years or sooner. Who knows, with the Trump administration and the talk about a new Fed chairman and perhaps tying Treasury bonds to gold to reinforce the the debt in our country, saying, oh, it's going to be backed by gold, and then they would have to reprice gold at some high level to do that. And this is all speculation on my part and stuff that I've been reading and so forth. But, longer term, you have to remain positive. But, gold certainly getting up to 4,400 doesn't preclude it. You're dropping back to 3,500, let's say, on a correction, and then going up again later. And silver, you know, it outperformed gold, got to $58.9, and charts say, well, yeah, that's great, but, you know, in a correction, it can get down into the mid-40s and or low-40s and then go up again afterwards. So you have to decide what your time frame is. But, you know, the charts look, you know, a little toppy here on a trading basis, but I'm not selling. I'm just going to stay in there because of the political connection here. I think what's unhappening, you know, will happen likely in the next several months or year in the metals, and you know, the concern about what's going on in the economy and our debt, which is astronomical, and how that's all going to be dealt with. So you know, we've been talking about this for the longest time, I mean a couple of decades or more, about why gold should be the play to hedge against this, our great debt and government spending, and just wouldn't go anywhere. It finally kicked in here right after Trump became president. So there's probably some political tie-in here with the repricing of gold. And, you know, like I say, there's even talk about tying it to the crypto market. So a lot of interesting stuff going on there. It's, you know, really game-changing stuff, things that we haven't seen since Nixon took us off the gold standard in 1971. So we'd be getting those type of dramatic announcements or events perhaps going forward. So just a good market to stay on top of.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, what's happening with Bitcoin?
Well, very interesting. You know, people tend to get super bullish when things are real high, and they get super bearish when things, you know, have super sharp corrections. And what we saw in Bitcoin could have been one hell of a buying opportunity. So far, it appears it might be the case. We'll just have to watch it. I mean, you had a drop from in Bitcoin, just talking about that one crypto, because there's so many that we can talk about. But, you know, 126,000, I think it topped out in August, gets down to 8,000 in the last week or so. I mean, that's a nice correction. And everybody was pretty scared and panicked about it. And, you know, I think I had talked about maybe the risk of 75,000 or so, and it got to 80, which was pretty close. I mean, that could have been a big, big bottom, and we could be 150,000 in 3, 4, 5 months. And people say, gee, how come we didn't buy it at 80 when it got there? And in fact, I know some traders said they were trying to buy it when it got down there, and they couldn't even get filled. And some got in the mid-80s because it just, the market was moving so fast. It was tough to get an execution, or the market just was, you know, crazy market. So, you know, it's rallied back into the low 90s, and we'll just have to wait and see. You know, the charts say, you know, got oversold there. We had a bounce. And, you know, as a trader, you just have to make a decision. Are you in it for that big move, or is it going to go back through the 80 and drop into the 70s or even a lot lower next year? And it's just a, you know, trading comment depending on what your time frame is. But I think what history has taught us, you know, since Bitcoin has been created, you know, in the last 14, 15 years, is that these sharp super corrections tend to be buying opportunities. And, you know, it's frustrating to an investor, you know, who gets in and, you know, any number and watch it go up that high and see that much of a correction. But we've seen this in individual stocks all the time. You can name any big name stock or company. You know, you can talk about Boeing or United Healthcare or any big, you know, big U.S. companies that had huge corrections, sometimes 50% corrections and more, and then they ultimately come back. So it depends, you know, what kind of stomach you have and how much of money you may have invested in that. But as far as Bitcoin is concerned, you know, I have to remain basically positive, but I'm taking a multi-year perspective, as we always do with this thing. You know, you trade it. I mean, we have it on our list. We have a blockchain letter. And if you recall, I sold all my Bitcoin and all our, you know, crypto stocks. I think it was on November 2nd. I said, go to cash, because the market looked like it was going to correct. I didn't think it was going to correct as much as it did. But we went to cash, and I got a lot of positive input on that. How the hell did you get out and anticipate that type of thing? And then after it dropped here, we started nibbling again. So we have some small positions in our blockchain letter, taking advantage of the sell-off. But, you know, getting back to my overall perspective, you know, U.S. government creating a Bitcoin reserve and, you know, Trump's pro-crypto attitude. And, you know, again, this, you know, there's still some legislation that's pending in Congress. And I have referred to that in the blockchain letter, you know, which ones that are still sort of pending. I think after January 1st, there's some further legislation that has to go through and may take a little bit longer for that. So, and I think we talked about this months ago that some of this legislation could carry into 2026. But, you know, I think the perspective you have to take is that between now and 2030, you know, taking like a 3-4 year perspective, a lot is going to be happening in the crypto market, whether it's Bitcoin and or others. Some are predicting, you know, Ethereum, for example, ETH, which is around $2,600. I have to check the price this morning, this afternoon for you. But, you know, some are saying it could be up 10 times in value in the next, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. So if that's the case, you have to consider, you know, what, you know, how much you want to allocate and what your time frame is, and perhaps consider dollar cost averaging into that market. Now, I understand people like Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett, and a lot of very smart people think that crypto and Bitcoin are worthless and you shouldn't even touch that market. And, you know, I'm not going to argue with these smart people, but, you know, in the meantime, you know, there's a lot of trading that goes on and opportunity in the meantime, whether they're ultimately right and Bitcoin goes to zero and we find out 5 years from now that it was worthless. But in the meantime, you know, talk to the people that paid, you know, a few hundred dollars for Bitcoin or less and watched it go to 126,000 and wonder, you know, well, that may have been true, but look at all the money that was made in the meantime. So even when the tulip mania, you know, back in, was in the 16th century or whatever, a lot of money was made in tulips, even though it busted and went to zero ultimately. So, yeah, you know, my website is VR Trader, and we try to, you know, take advantage of some short-term moves, and you know, we just, you know, play the markets. Anyway, I sort of a long-winded response here on the Bitcoin. Basically, overall positive, but, you know, if you're a trader and it, you know, comes back through 80,000, the recent low, then we have to look at where's the next big support level. But more than likely, you know, the fact that we start nibbling down here, you know, we may decide to take some profits. And since it's bounced a little bit, then, you know, reevaluate the market come into the new year. So let's see how, what happens. Some say that we're in what I guess you would call, quote unquote, a crypto winter right now, which is a nice way of saying we're in a corrective phase in the crypto market, and this may be part and parcel to the pending legislation that I referred to. This still has to go through Congress and profit takers into the end of the year, which I mentioned, you know, many institutions, money managers and others may have had just big profits in Bitcoin and in crypto and said, gee, let's start taking profits. So some selling came in and that begat more selling, and then it sort of, you know, got out of hand and we had this big sell-off. But, you know, just taking profits could have been part and parcel to the correction. After all, we did have a big move.
Is there such thing as a safe haven if the market corrects? And we're told because the bubble caused by AI is so big, if it's a crash, it'll be probably the biggest ever.
You know, you say cash is your ultimately safe haven. Gold, you know, secondly, I suppose, and also, you know, some people don't even agree with me, but U.S. Treasuries for the time being, at some point, you know, we could default on our debt here in the U.S. You know, there's been five defaults already. People say we never defaulted on the debt here in the U.S. I actually have an article which shows several defaults that have already occurred on the U.S. debt. I think the sixth one could be the big one if that's the one people are worried about. If that happens, and of course, being in U.S. Treasuries or Treasury bonds would not be the safest place to be. But for the time being, that is. So, you know, cash, Treasury bills, precious metals, you know, physical assets like real estate, you know, I'm saying real estate can't drop in value, but, you know, it's not going to go to zero, you know, so you have to put place money somewhere. So, you know, having cash in the mattress, you know, what's the value of the cash? Is it depreciating or appreciating? And that, of course, is the big risk. And I guess the big answer is, you know, metals. But, you know, I mean, look at gold. I mean, I've been trading it since the 1980s. I mean, I'm buying it at $500, $400, $300. Waiting 20 years, 30 years for it to finally make the move that it finally made, you know, a lifetime, pretty much the same story existed back then, you know, going back, you know, in the 1970s, you know, when we had the big economic collapse and the big inflation and the oil embargo and Nixon's taking us off the gold standard. And think, I remember 1974. I mean, I think the Dow got down to what, 600? I mean, it used to be only 1,000 at the time, and it went down there, but they thought that was the end of the world. So we rallied from 680 in the Dow in 1974 up to 49,000 in the last couple of weeks. I mean, but you're talking, you know, 50-year time frame here of things that have happened and didn't happen. So, you know, it just depends what you're you know, your time frame is. So, you know, you can always be scared. You know, as an article I actually put in my newsletter, you know, all the bad events that have occurred in the last 50 years that drove the market down, but ultimately it came back. So if you take a long-term view, if you do nothing, I want to say, like, dumb money, you know, just holding the S&P all these years. I think the S&P, when I was back in Chicago, it was as low as 100, and now, you know, look at it now at 6,900, 6,800. I mean, this is in a period from the 1970s to the present. I mean, of course, that's a lifetime or maybe a couple of generations. I don't know how you want to count generations, but it seems like no matter how bad things get, we seem to always come out of it. You just have to deal with the bad shakeouts along the way. But, you know, even look at the COVID crash we had only 5 years ago. I mean, the Dow was, what, 28, 29,000. It got down to 18,000, and now it's 49,000 5 years later. Do you want to run for the hills, or do you want to stay invested? And I guess, you know, I'm not an investment advisor now, but, you know, you want to be diversified and, you know, keep, I mean, look at Warren Buffett. I mean, he's raised more cash than he's ever had. He's got a war chest there. He keeps selling. In fact, I have his article in my newsletter just about every day, just reminding everybody about what, you know, Warren Buffett has been doing, and he's building a giant cash reserve up because obviously he's anticipating a shakeout. And that would be an opportunity for him to jump in and steal a lot of stocks at very cheap prices. So he's anticipating something and has for about a year or so now. So I think that's as probably good a model as we could all expect, Jim. You know, if Warren Buffett is raising cash and he's probably the best living money manager on the planet, what does that say about what we should be doing? You know, we shouldn't be getting overly invested here. And if anything, you keep your money safe in money markets or in treasury bills, or if you think gold is a good hedge and real estate and other things, and keep a lower, you know, exposure to the stock market, you know, moving forward here, just see how things play out. I mean, you know, it's tough to be super bullish on stocks when we've seen the type of advance we've had. And there's some, you know, just technical work says we're overdue for a little more of a correction. So it might come next year. Likely it'll come next year. But we may see another push higher here with the Santa Claus rally and Hanukkah and all this stuff into the new year first. So we take it a day at a time. I'm trying to stay as optimistic as I can. But there's, you know, the old expression, you know, if there's a bull market, we'll find it somewhere. And I think Jim Cramer is notorious for creating that expression. Well, you know, we've been making some money in gold and silver and natural gas, for example. And, you know, we know there's always a place, you know, where markets are moving and there's opportunity. So, and if you're really a bear, you can buy inverse ETFs and play the market for the downside. So if we really get a clear sell signal in the market, we'll be in, we'll be short the S&P and the Dow and the TSX, and just use the inverse ETFs to capitalize on the sell-off. I should have done that with the Bitcoin and the crypto. There are a couple inverse ETFs, not too many around. I think there's an inverse ETF for Bitcoin, and we didn't jump on that. We just went to cash. But in hindsight, we could have played the short in Bitcoin using that ETF. So the same thing applies to the stock market. We should be able to profit. And if Warren Buffett's right and we start that correction, we should be able to make money on the downside.
Or if everyone's running for the hills, maybe it's time to buy the hills.
That's what Warren Buffett wants to do.
Hills of cash, mountains of it.
Yeah.
Mark, always fun chatting with you.
Talk to you next week. Thank you so much.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.